If you're like me and you grew up in St. Louis in the 1990s, you probably remember the Boatman's guy. Do you remember these commercials from Boatman's Bank? They were pretty funny. People would mock them, and not mock them, that's the wrong word. People would imitate them around town, and the guy on the commercial had a name. His name was Tom Sharp. He is a professional actor, comedian, and now inaugural. Is this your first ever podcast, Tom?
It's my first ever podcast, Benjamin. I hope I'm dressed properly for it.
fingers crossed. Tom Sharp is his name. Joining us, are you in California, is that correct?
Yeah, in Los Angeles.
Love it. And I am just really excited to hear your voice and ask you some questions about your time as the famous Boatman's guy. And, of course, you've been in other commercials. I've seen you in national spots, and I've seen you on late 80s, early 90s sitcoms. You've done a lot in your life. But here in St. Louis, you'll be forever remembered as the Boatman's guy. How does that feel to you?
Well, it was such a great... First of all, the writing was terrific. You know, Lloyd Wolf was a writer on it, and then I think he had his own agency for a while. And, I mean, most of the time, the scripts were terrific to begin with, and you're not going anywhere in advertising unless the client is really wants interesting stuff. And the client at Boatman's Bank, Larry Bayless is his name. You know, he's really open to great stuff, and he got it from the agency, and on sets and stuff. Sometimes something isn't working quite as well as it looked in your typewriter when you're sitting there in your office.
Sure.
And you know, I mean, I don't mean always, but once in a while. And they were so loose about just coming up with stuff. The client, Larry, would sometimes say something, or someone from the agency. Or I'd, you know, come up with something. It was a great atmosphere to be working in.
That's awesome. And I looked up an old article from 1994 here in our newspaper, the Post-Dispatch, and to show how popular the commercials were, they had a 77% positive awareness rating. And once the Boatman's Guy commercial starring you took off, they were up into the 90s, which is...
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, just unheard of it at the time. And a lot of it had to do with your dry sense of humor and your ability to be a sales pitchman. Can you explain to the listeners here on our podcast, Hosted Ravioli, for those that never saw the commercials, what was the gist of your ads for Boatman's?
Well, I was just kind of me, just being, asking people things and, points about the commercials. And they always had, they were always funny. And that was it, just trying to give a good positive image for Boatman's Bank. But I tell you, you said it was up in the 70s and in the 90s. One time I was on the air with Charlie Brennan on KMOX.
Yeah.
And it was during the 1996 Olympics, and Boatman's was a big sponsor, I guess, locally there for the Olympics. And I was on the phone, and they had people calling in talking about how much they liked the campaign. And it was one call after another. Oh, my God, I love the spots and wonderful spots. And another thing, I'm thinking, geez, it was embarrassing almost. I'm thinking, oh, wow, that's great. And then this little old lady called and said, hi, my name is Edna Farnsworth, and I'm from St. Louis here, and I see these commercials on the Olympics all the time. I said, oh, that's great. She said, and you make me sick to my stomach. I can't get to the TV fast enough to turn it off. You're ruining the Olympics for me. And I was laughing so hard. And Charlie Brennan's people, everyone in the studio, they're kind of apologizing. I said, no. Finally, there's someone who has made a correct assessment of my acting ability.
There it is.
And it was really, you make me sick to my stomach. And I can't get to the TV fast enough to turn it off.
Yeah, it's a small world. My grandmother is Edna Farnsworth. No, I'm just kidding. That's amazing.
What a coincidence.
Yeah. Man, that's good stuff. I I remember, like, there was one you, they had you in a tree, and a gentleman is playing golf, and you basically opened the tree trunk
right.
and began speaking to the golfer. I mean, just bizarre,
right.
zany things. And there was, I guess if early on it was, how would you run a bank? How would you run a bank was kind of the the tagline.
Right, that was one of the lines. Yeah, how would you run a bank?
Yeah, yeah, and I remember there was a lot of just like ex-wife jokes and
right.
That's where all my money goes, is not to my bank but to my ex-wife, things like that.
Well, one of those commercials, the guy said, and we became friends actually, and I've known him ever since. And one of the actors, and he's the one. He was sitting out in the car. I said, "What would you do?" He said, "I'd put a ATM at the end of my ex-wife's driveway. That's where it all goes anyway." And that was supposed to be the end of that little bit. And I said, "You seem a little bitter." And he said, "Yeah."
That's good.
and it just him saying, "Yeah," there was just something really funny about that, the way he said it.
Sure.
I left it in. So.
That's so good. How did you get involved in this profession?
Well, I was a copywriter in ad agencies in Detroit for I don't know, quite a few years, and then five or six years, and then I decided to come out to Los Angeles to do stand-up comedy.
Nice.
And so I had a job during the day working writing commercials. And I was doing stand-up at night, probably six nights a week, sometimes seven nights a week. And then after a couple of years, I literally got my act together and then started doing stand-up around the country. But I was still involved with commercials, producing some radio commercials for people that I used to work with. And then I started acting in radio and TV commercials. And I was never a big fan of all the travel that was involved in stand-up. You know, I don't want to, you know, sound like a whiner, like it's actual work, like, you know, working on I-80, fixing the road in the middle of the summertime. You know, it's
right.
Not actual work, but all the travel, and some people that I've worked with they'd be gone for, I don't know, 40 or 45 weeks a year. And I thought, I don't think that's going to work. So, and I always liked commercials better. I just liked the advertising, people from advertising, and I liked the time limit, the 30 seconds or 60 seconds. It just always appealed to me. So, that's how I got involved. So I just basically switched sides.
Yeah,
became an actor.
Yeah, when you tell people you do stand up comedy or did stand up comedy, do they promptly on the spot say, "What's your best joke?" Or did I just do it for the first time?
Well, if they ever saw my act, they would know that'd be a stupid question.
Touche.
Part of why I stopped. No, I don't know. Well, you know, if somebody has seen you someplace,
mm-hmm.
even if it's in a club or on a commercial, they think, even if you've done one commercial, they think a Brinks truck is coming to your back door with throwing bags of money onto your porch.
Right.
And so, but if they've never seen you before on anything, and you tell them, you know, I'm an actor, and they haven't seen you on something, they're going, "Could you use a few bucks?"
Right.
You know.
Right.
You know, they think you're broke or you're.
Yeah.
I'm really doing okay, but you know, but thanks, I'll take it.
I'll take the $2. Yeah. I love just going through your IMDb page because some of my favorite shows, sitcoms from the 80s and 90s, you had roles on. You were on Family Matters, a.k.a. the Steve Urkel show, One
right.
Day at a Time. And, of course, I remember you vaguely, if you will, just from a Golden Girls episode, because it was when the Boatman's commercials were going on, and it was like I felt like a detective, like some sort of genius. I spotted the Boatman's guy on a rerun of the Golden Girls, and there you were. What was it like being on the Golden Girls?
Well, you know, it was the episode was it started the day after the Emmys had been awarded, and I think Betty White won an Emmy, and the others had been nominated, and so you know, I'm just the guy there for the week, and. And, you know, people introduced, you know, the director introduces the guest cast. And I said, you know, you guys were all nominated for Emmys for this show, and I got nothing, you know. There was even not even a mention. Of course, I hadn't done it yet.
Right.
But so I played a funeral director.
Okay.
And all through rehearsals for a week, there was a description in the script of what the casket looked like. Okay. A description of the casket, which was kind of a convoluted description, but I got it every time. Every time in rehearsals. You know, I didn't screw up any lines. So on most of these things, they shoot the show in front of an audience, kind of about 4 o'clock or so in the afternoon, and then they break for dinner, and you're looking, you know, doing notes and stuff like that, and then they shoot it again in front of another crowd. Mm. And so, the first night, like 15 minutes before we're going to shoot it, the second AD. Assistant director came over and said, "You know, your dialogue doesn't really match what the casket looks like. So we're changing what you were saying to when you're describing it. You say it's a hand embellished gold leaf detail work.
Okay,
that was it. This is 15 minutes before, and he left. I'm thinking, I'm so screwed. I'm never going to remember that." And so we get to it, and I say, you know, of course the casket. I'm acting like almost like a used car salesman.
Sure.
And I said, of course the casket is handing a lady. You know, went into Jerry Lewis and got a big laugh with the crowd, not usable. And I thought, but when you're just the guest for the week, you get one mistake like that, and you know, don't do it a second time. Thank God I remembered it the second time. So
hand embellished. Okay,
but
yeah.
All of them in that cast were just sensational. Especially Betty White. She was just what a wonderful person. So
yeah, what a neat opportunity to just—I hate to say—bounce around, but just make an appearance here and appearance there on all the TV shows of the time. And I saw you were even on Home Improvement with Tim Allen.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Right, yeah, I did, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 episodes. I knew Tim from doing stand-up before mm-hmm. when he was still in Detroit. And the atmosphere on that set was great.
Just, that's awesome.
Great. Tim, he never, he would take a running joke through the week and keep repeating it. And some people are thinking, oh God, when is he going to stop mentioning that? And other people like me just thought it got funnier.
That's great.
The more times he mentioned it.
I love it. That's awesome. I love stuff like that.
So,
now, what about St. Louis, the city? By being the boatman's guy, I know you had other gigs, but did that link you to our city? Did you get to spend time here?
Yes, I did. And you know, I grew up outside of Detroit. Big Tigers fan, mm-hmm. still my team, and you know, big rivalry over decades between the Tigers and the Cardinals, and you know, St. Louis, you know, if you're a Tiger fan, mm-hmm. Was kind of like Russia or somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a rival town. It's like if you're a Cubs,
sure.
if you're a Cardinals fan, the Cubs are, you know, they're dirt. You know,
mm-hmm. yes,
and dirt. so when I started working in St. Louis. My feeling about the town was that, first of all, I think Cardinal fans. I don't think there's a group of fans for any team better than Cardinals fans.
Mm.
They're just so through thick and thin, and just you know, places packed no matter. You know, whether the team is good or not in a particular year. And working around St. Louis, it struck me that St. Louis is one of those cities that I've been to, a very short list of towns that I think, you know, this would have been a great place to grow up if I hadn't grown up where I grew up. And it always has struck me as like a big, small town.
Yeah.
a really big small town. I mean that in a good way. Mm-hmm. And I was shooting actually some commercials for Southwest Bank about 10 years ago. I did some spots for about, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. And we were shooting at different places all around St. Louis. And one place was probably on a Saturday at, I think it's called Drew's.
The ice cream place, Ted Drew's?
Yeah, the custard and
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
And wedding parties. During the course of when we were there, a limousine would pull up, and the entire wedding party would get out and go and get a custard and have pictures taken in front of Drew's as part of their wedding album.
Yeah.
And that it was such an institution. And finally, after about 3 or 4 hours, I thought, I've got to get one of these custards.
Sure.
For myself. And I thought, well, that's why the wedding party came over here, because they were so good.
It really is good.
But that was my sense of, and we shot some stuff around where the exposition of 1896 or something. There's a big museum at the top of the hill.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
In this spectacular park. And we also shot in a little town, can't remember the name of the town, but it's where the Lewis and Clark expedition started.
Okay.
You know, it's a little town. All the buildings are from the 19th century, and so we're standing on a sidewalk, and we're talking to people. Some of the actors, that was one of the locations, and someone said, right down there, that spot right down there on the river, is where the Lewis and Clark expedition started.
Mm.
And I said, you're kidding. And on a break, I walked down there, and I'm thinking, it started right here. And I'm thinking, they're in the boats, and Lewis or Clark says, Sacagawea, come on, we're running late, would you put your lipstick on in the boat? and it was just so I couldn't actually focus for part of the commercial because I thought it started right there, right down on the so. And I'd always try to get anytime I was working in St. Louis for Boatman's or for Southwest Bank, which is also gone.
Only one common denominator there.
Yeah, they always get merged into. Actually, when I was doing after Boatman sold to Nations Bank, Nations Bank bought Boatman's Bank. So then I started doing commercials for Magna Bank.
Okay.
And they said, this is a long-term thing. Magna Bank, like a month later, was bought by Union Planters Bank.
Okay.
So then I was doing commercials for the transition from Magna Bank to Union Planters Bank, and I said to the guy from the agency, I said, one of the commercials was they're putting up a new sign. I said, you should put up these signs with Velcro.
Right. Exactly.
Make it so much easier for you. And so it was just great. And but I'd always try to get a hotel room. There's a hotel that it looks you're looking right at the arch, right?
Oh,
at
cool.
the gateway arch. And I many times went over, and I didn't take the elevator up because I just didn't look like I wanted to be enclosed in an elevator going. Oh, but I stood under the arch on numerous occasions and thought, how in the heck did they build this?
I know, right? It's so cool.
Yeah.
It's almost become like, if you're from here, it's like cliched, the arch, go show the people from out of town the arch. But then you get there, you're like, no, this is a really amazing thing here in our
town. When 9/11 happened, I was in New Hampshire shooting commercials for the New Hampshire lottery. And it happened that morning. We were supposed to shoot all week. And we just finished one commercial when the planes hit the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And they wisely canceled the whole thing and did it about a month later. I came back. But I rented a car and drove back across country. And there were a number of ways I could have gotten back to Los Angeles. But I wanted to go through St. Louis because I wanted to see the arch.
Wow. Okay.
It was still there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's a, I don't know, it's, I'm going to say a reminder, but it's a comfort, it's a constant.
It was very comforting. I'm driving by and going, the arch is still there.
Yeah, definitely.
And I can see it, in whatever city you're from, the people living someplace. They go, you know, how many times are we going to see, you know, the Hollywood Walk of Fame, you know, on a thing? Or how many times are we going to see the, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco? You know, there are other things, you know, but the arch is, I just think it's a great thing. That and the custard at Drew's.
Yeah, yeah. Ted Drew's, he turns that thing upside down in the commercials. It does not fall out of the cup. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
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 Now,
but, you know, actually, one of my favorite things about Boatman's was they had Boatman's Day at the ballpark.
Oh, cool.
Every June, there was one day when it was, because they sponsored the Cardinals game, one of the sponsors of the Cardinals games. And I'd get to go sit in the booth for half an inning with Jack Buck.
Whoa.
Or another half inning with Joe Buck. I'm thinking, and you listen to people broadcasting a game, and they make it, they really make it look easy.
Mm-hmm.
When you're sitting there, and and they say, Tom, take it for you know, this batter, and I turn into Ralph Cramden on the Honeymoon.
Sure.
Hamana, 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 and it's but it was so exciting. I'm thinking, I'm sitting next to these icons, these two icons, and probably about 20,000 of the 50,000 people in the park were Boatman's employees, all wearing red Boatman's T-shirts and stuff.
Okay.
And so I'm this one time, I think it was in '96, may have been the last time I did it. It was about 98 degrees. Humid. They still had the AstroTurf in Old Busch Stadium. It was just my legs were microwaved.
Yeah.
It was so hot. And so, Larry Bayless, maybe the world's best client ever.
Nice.
He said because I threw out the first pitch, but before that they said you know, people were speaking to the group, and they said they were going to introduce me to say a few words about the new campaign. And I said, oh, okay, great. I'm thinking, you know, it's the hottest day ever. I don't think I want to go to the marketing strategy.
Right, right.
For the new campaign. And so, but I said, yeah, I'll do that. And so they said, you know, now Tom Sharp, the Boatman's guy, has a few words to say. And I supplied my own echo. I went up to the microphone. I said, today, I consider myself, the sweatiest man on the face of the earth. And, you know, it got a laugh.
Yeah.
And I'm waving, thank you. And I went back, and Larry Bayless said, I thought you were going to talk about the campaign. I went, oh, my God, I completely forgot. You know, it's too late now.
Too late. That's genius.
Too late.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Man,
can't go back.
I bet people are telling that story today. You wouldn't believe it. That was the funniest thing I ever saw. That's rather creative.
I don't know about that, yeah. But it was. But the guys who came up with the Save the Boatman's Guy campaign.
Yes.
When Nations Bank bought Boatman's,
mm-hmm.
I was watching CNN, like a business report or something. It said Nation Bank buys Boatman's Bank. I go, well, that's the end of me.
Sure.
You know, because it'll be a new name, new agency, new everybody, and that's the end of me. And so, John McGuire, I think they used to refer to him at the Post-Dispatch as the Duke of Deadline.
Yeah.
And I don't know who cooked it up, but he and Charlie Brennan had this campaign going to save the Boatman's Guy. And it was, you know, really funny. I was working in New Orleans. When they started it, and they asked if I would go over to a studio to have a picture taken of me in a St. Louis Blues helmet and a Blues jersey.
Okay.
And so, because it was, I think it was like later in the fall or something like when they did this. And so I went over, took the picture, and they sent it back, and they put that picture of me wearing the helmet and the jersey on these little, like if you had a mask, you know, and you're just holding up the mask in front of your face.
Oh yeah.
And it was a picture of me with two holes for eyes, mm-hmm. on a giant, like a Good Humor stick that you would hold up this mask.
Sure.
And so they had this thing at I'm not sure. I can't remember where the Blues play, but
arena. It must have been it must have still been called Kiel Center.
It was in 96. And so I came into the arena, and it was like, I thought, I mean, people are going, oh, yeah, it's a Bowman's guy. It's a Bowman's guy. I mean, everybody walking past. I'm not, I don't want to sound like, some politician to say everybody is, thinks I'm fabulous.
Sure.
It was really exciting. And when I went out into the arena, almost everyone in the arena was holding up these these things, and there was a presentation to a charity, a check or something to a charity, that was kind of the I don't know. There was somebody from a PR agency, I think, who cooked it up. Mm-hmm. It was thinking that it was their way of I'm going out the door now, and we're going to finish it off with presenting this this check. And you know, I knew what was going on, but it was still fun.
Yeah.
And so I did. I had a microphone, and one thing I learned is, because I played hockey when I was a kid, is it isn't like riding a bike. If you haven't skated in 20 years, it's not like getting on a bike after 20 years.
Gotcha.
It's you're a little wobbly at first. So I went out and I said to this, the place is packed. I said, big Blues fan. I said, I grew up outside of Detroit. Boo! like phony comedy boos coming raining down. I said, yeah, I was a big Red Wings fan. Even more boos. Boo! And I said, on second thought, the Red Wings are scum, and they've always been scum. Big cheers. Yeah, you're right. I never liked them, even when I lived there. And, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And it was so much fun.
I love it.
I really, really hated to see it end.
So. Yeah, but it, of course it stunk that it ended, but how about this? I mean, what's the math? 22 years later, or I guess 18 years later, I'm not very good at math.
22 years later.
22 years later?
Because, I remember when the checks stopped coming.
That's what it was, yeah. I mean, here we are talking about it. I know a lot of the listeners to Host Ravioli, I know that voice. I remember those commercials. And it's neat that you did so well in the commercials, and they came out at the right place at the right time, that people generations later remember and are fond of the memories. So thank you, Tom, for being
here. There was a kid, actually, and I wish I could remember. There was a kid who dressed up for Halloween as the boatman's guy.
Genius.
And, oh, my God, I'm drawing a blank on his name, because I took him and his parents out to, a brunch at the hotel I was staying at.
Oh.
And he was on the air. And he'd go out in a Navy – he went out in a Navy jacket. And,
okay.
A blue shirt and a red and blue striped tie and khaki pants, and went out on Halloween Joe – his name is Joe, very short last name.
I mean, it's not Joe Buck.
No. He was 10 years old.
Oh, the kid was 10 years old. Okay.
The kid who was posing, went out on Halloween dressed like the boatman's guy, was just a kid living in St. Louis.
Oh, okay.
And it got into the news a little bit. Joe... I can't remember his last name. Anyway, very funny kid. The parents were terrific, and so it was things like that, and just being around St. Louis for Boatman's and for Southwest Bank, and if I'm changing planes or something once in a while in St. Louis, I think, hey, I'm in St. Louis again.
Yeah,
it's a good positive feeling. And I actually pull for the Cardinals.
Really?
To do well.
So what happened?
Not when they were playing the Tigers.
I was going to say, the 2006 World Series.
Well, not when they played the Tigers in 06.
Yeah.
And when they were – actually, the Tigers were favored. And, I mean, they got just shellacked.
Yeah.
But a sports writer for either the Detroit Free Press or the Detroit News picked the Tigers in 3.
Yep.
In 3. And I can remember reading that. I'm going, don't make them mad.
Right.
Now, Now, you're making the Cardinals mad.
That's right.
There's no chance you're going to win this series now.
Exactly.
Oh, that's so stupid.
Tigers in three. That was funny. Well, hey, this is cool, Tom. I sincerely appreciate you taking the time out of your Hollywood lifestyle to be part of Hosted Ravioli, and the stories are great. Gosh, you mentioned the where Lewis and Clark began. It reminded me of one time I was in Venice, which is, of course, is considered the St. Louis of Italy. And we were we're getting a tour on one of those boats, because that's all they have is boats. And my family was in it, and the guy's like, "And over here to the right is the childhood home of Marco Polo. And over here to the left is the school of Marco Polo." And I go, "And right down here is where he first started playing the game." And nobody laughed. Thank you, Tom, for the pity laugh. And I stand by that as like a funny little way to, like, one of my crowning achievements. But I'm glad you laughed, because my family did not.
That's a great joke.
Thank you.
That's a great joke.
Thank you, Tom.
I was in, my wife and I were in Venice once, and it's, I think it's maybe my favorite place that I've ever been.
Yeah.
Because no cars, no bicycles, and all that they've, all the wars and everything that they've gone through, and you walk down some of those streets that, you know, people have been walking down since the Middle Ages, and but that's a great joke, Marco. First played
off
game.
Off the cuff. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I'd like to get back to Venice. Hey, maybe you can join my wife and me. We'll go to Venice, and you know what'll happen? We'll be walking around, and someone will be like, "Is that the boatman's guy?" Because I swear,
the boatman's guy. Push him in the canal.
right. What did Edna say on the radio show?
You make me sick to my stomach, and I can't get to the TV fast enough to turn it off.
Fast enough. Thank you, Edna, for calling in. Yeah. That is the voice of Tom Sharp, a boatman's guy, and, of course, an actor and stand-up comedian, and he's just really funny dude, and I really appreciate him joining us here on Hosted Ravioli. Folks, please subscribe to Hosted Ravioli. You can find us, of course, on the Post-Dispatch website, stltoday.com/podcast, stltoday.com/podcast. And we're on iTunes and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe. We always have fun putting this together. Thanks to Gary Harrelson, our producer. And thanks to Tom Sharp for joining us on this edition of Hosted Ravioli.